This is Jason Q, Citizen and Friends, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Jason Q, Citizen and Friends program. We're going to do something a little bit different this hour. We're going to cross to Wade Northousen shortly. He's a farmer out on the road doing a whole lot of work, raising a whole lot of awareness about issues that many of us aren't quite familiar with. And it's very important, therefore, that we find out what is actually going on. And when you look at the actions around the world now, and the first thing that brought our attention to what was going on was these conspicuous fires of food factories around the United States that kept burning and burning and burning. And of course, the fact checkers told us that there was no evidence of anything ever and that it was all just a coincidence. Coincidence is the most popular term of anything these days. Everything is coincidence, but nothing ever is causal, and you can't relate anything back to anything, and you've just got to go along that it's just all a big random mat of bad luck. If the globalist organizations were gamblers, they'd be broke now, but they don't have to do that because they control everything. But it makes you wonder about what it is and why it is that these things are coming out in a certain way. How is it that we worry about food famine and we're obsessed now with the price of energy in the green energy world that's not quite working? And then when you hear this morning on Channel 9 News in Australia, the CEO of one of the major energy companies coming on, and he even confused Karl Stefanovic when Karl asked, well, will the energy prices come down? And he said, oh, yes, they will. And he said, well, it's going to take us a few years yet to build the necessary infrastructure. The CEO fell over himself with a big smile on his face to talk about the fact that the reason that the price of energy was going up was that that they needed to build new infrastructure. Well, hang on a second, Carl thought, well, perhaps maybe you should have done this a little bit earlier and ramped it up, but no, that wasn't anything to answer for. And he just kept rambling on about the reasons why he wasn't going to answer the question. And he had Stefanovic thinking this is a bit odd, and all he could do was just gently agree to disagree, which was interesting in that the mainstream, and particularly Carl, seems to be scratching his head more and more. So that's an interesting yardstick that we'll keep an eye on there. But more to it, why then is this obsession now to seem to want to destroy our food sources? And why are so many people getting ahead of the curve as they did on COVID and looking at new ways of food security? And is that where we all need to go? Well, it seems logically yes. But if COVID served a purpose to create massive data points, and these data points are so that we can determine who's compliant and who's not compliant, then if 95% of the Australian population took the double jab, then they pretty much know that if you can scare the population enough, the government says, well, 95% will do exactly what we tell them. What they don't obviously like is the fact that less than that took three jabs, less took four, so COVID has served its purpose. So they need to be very acute with the latest scares. That's why the monkeypox thing, they're trying to scare us, they're trying to bring in the marketing to change the name and get everyone excited about it one way or another, but people just aren't buying it, and obviously they're turning their heads away. And so next we look at, if this food security situation continues, therefore, what actually happens if we get a food famine? Well, wouldn't that be a perfect time to bring in a social credit score? Because the unvaccinated would obviously not go down a social credit score path, and they'd be the first to be denied food rations. Make sense? So, if it came down to it and people were starving, they would happily line up and comply and do the best that they possibly could to get their food rations. We're not playing by those rules, it seems, because that's why you want to become self-sufficient. It's why you need to grow a thick skin. So when people come after you, you can say, no thanks, I'm not playing with that at all. Don't miss out on a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen to us anywhere, anytime, available right now to download, keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
Telling it like it is.
They're not afraid to be them.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Battle, or I should say Billboard Battalion, is the website of Wade Northousen, who is a farmer doing all sorts of raising awareness work around the country now and bringing an alert on would you believe, water and irrigation security, which he will explain better than I can. I'm going to bring him on right now. Wade, welcome to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends.
Good afternoon there, Jason, and yeah, very big welcome to you and all your listeners as well, mate. So, my history, I suppose, if you like, I'm a third-generation farmer in north-central Victoria, Australia, and I've been involved in the agri-politics area for a long, long time, and have been, I suppose, looking at all the things that they call conspiracy theories over the many years, to which end most of the so-called conspiracy theories end up coming true.
Yes.
So, Jason, what I'm concerned about now is Australian agriculture, for quite a long time now, has been under attack, if you like, from government regulations, government laws, new changes to industries, to the point where, you know, quite a long time ago, I was trying to raise the alarm that we're seeing government policy, which you would have to say is deliberately designed to wipe out Australian family farmers and just destroy them and put at an enormous risk Australia's food security.
It's absolutely devastating that we could even think this, but the evidence just stacks up, and we're seeing it in real time by this unbelievable ignorance and almost, well, it is reckless behaviour disguised as virtue signalling, isn't it, that they're doing all these things for all these reasons that don't really matter. What's the point of having a great, fantastic earth if there's no one here on earth to enjoy the benefits of it? It seems that we look just in one direction. Wade, what are the biggest concerns right now that are absolutely undeniable in the fact that of the what you're saying, these claims that prove your point?
So in Australia here, in 2007, they brought in what they call the Federal Water Act, and that was to enact what they termed the Murray-Darling Basin Plan. And what that was a massive, great new plan and legislation to wipe out enormous amounts of the irrigated agriculture under the lies and disguise of environmental policy along the lines of we have to return all this water to the Murray River because, you know, we've wrecked the river and the lower lakes and the Coorong in South Australia need all this extra water. And under very close cross-examination, you find out that the so-called environmental science that this whole plan is based on is complete and absolute fraud. It is total lies, and the government, my take on it, the government was absolutely committed to doing what they did with the water. They come up with a whole bunch of corrupt scientists and lawyers to support their case. They completely disregarded and ignored any of the real honest scientists who put forward the proper things. So the bottom line was they put this plan through and it has absolutely devastated, in particular, family farmers. And family farmers are, family farmers are the ones that they are attacking most. And what we're seeing is that the land resources and the water resources are being transferred from Australian family farmers into the hands of multinational corporates.
Right, so this is what's going on. Okay, and how's that going? How's that happening?
So that's happening by legislation. And what they did is the irrigation water used to be attached to the farmland. And what they did was they called unbundling. So they detached the water entitlement from the land as so as it could then be traded as a general commodity on an open market. So therefore, what happened was the corporates then came along and they've got a lot more money than anybody else has, and they bought up enormous chunks of the water, and the farmers couldn't compete against that. So long story short, we saw a massive loss of farmers. Farmers went broke, to the point where, you know, many of them had family breakdowns and even lots of suicides because of the pressure and the stresses that they were under from these changes to water policy. And the bottom line is we've seen enormous decreases in Australia's food production because of this, an enormous amount of the water resource went to the Commonwealth Environmental Water Holder to quite literally run down the river out into the Southern Ocean and take all our fresh water we need for food production, and they ran it into the sea, quite literally. So that's, you know, that's a part of, or the main crux of what's happened, and we've seen a massive crash and burn scenario in Australia's capacity to grow food and an enormous increase in foreign entities' control over our food production resources, which, in my opinion, if you ask me, works in with a lot of what the World Economic Forum is all about. You know, they openly tell you about creating food shortages, and now we're seeing this come along at the same time that across the globe we're seeing farmers wiped out and food production wiped out because of, once again, governments chasing environmental policies, in particular with regard to nitrogen-based fertilisers. So people need to understand that our food security is absolutely under attack. That is undeniable. That is happening, and it's going to get to a crunch time very soon where, you know, there are going to be food shortages, and this is going to be very, very ugly. This is going to get real bad.
Yes, it is truly frightening what's going on. And can we pinpoint exactly who's to blame and why it's been continued with a change of government, which is now two changes of government?
So the situation is now that whether you're talking about the Australian federal government or state and territory governments, this is very important for people to realise, those governments no longer work for us. They now operate for the sole purpose of promoting the policies of the World Economic Forum. The bloke who's in charge of the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, openly admits that their young global leaders, the WEF young global leaders, now have penetrated huge numbers of the governments and the cabinets around the world. Most of them, I think you would have to say, would be Western democratic cabinets, and they now are working for the World Economic Forum to pursue their policies, and I think they're absolute traitors to our country and saboteurs of everything that we need here to survive, both not only in food but also energy. You know, you mentioned energy there earlier on. The energy and food supply is absolutely being wiped out by these people, and they're going to restrict things that you have to conform to their garbage policies of all their digital IDs and digital currency and control measures. Otherwise, you'll be dead.
You just shake your head, don't you, Wade, that it's something so obvious, and yet we seem to have this ridiculous battle to go on to try and explain ourselves and spend so much time in that space. But this is what it's all about, is the dissemination of information from a perspective of getting this very, very important message out there. And so let me just go back a little bit. Can you explain, we've only got a couple of minutes left, but can you explain what it is that the governments around the world are obsessed with taking out nitrogen-based fertilisers?
Because over the last 20 years, agriculture has gone around and become very, very reliant on nitrogen-based fertilisers. And they reckon, pursuant to the climate change garbage policies, they need to take nitrogen out of the greenhouse gas kind of scenario. And they claim it's bad for the environment. So therefore, now they're restricting the use of that, which is going to have a devastating impact on the actual success of your crops. So, you know, you're going to see a massive reduction in food production because of this policy, and they're disguising it as climate policy. But, you know, the whole thing's set up to do exactly what it's doing and reduce our food, our ability to produce food. And that's what its bottom line is. That's what it's intended to do.
Yeah, this is the thing that it's glaringly obvious, isn't it? And yet the elephant in the room is always the one thing that the authorities seem to be very, very capable of ignoring, not seeing. They put their blinkers on and off they go. And this is one of the difficult questions, whether it's done by intent or by ignorance. And it seems impossible that if you look just one step ahead, you can see it all open up for you. And yet we have authorities in there literally mocking us for bringing up these very important points. But there it is straight there. We've seen what happened when they got rid of the fertilizer, what they introduced organic fertilizers in Sri Lanka. It caused a food famine. We see Justin Trudeau in Canada going down a pathway of also trying to get rid of fertilizer. And of course, now we see the same thing here in Australia with the threat again, once again, because of course, green responsibility. But what is the point of switching off food production and harming our people unless, of course, it reveals the true agenda that there's just too many people on earth? And yet in sparse Australia, we seem to be falling over ourselves to impress the world that we can be so diligent in following Klaus Schwab to our demise. I realize that we've got to take this break, Wade. So I'm very, very delighted that you've been able to take a few minutes out of your busy schedule to speak with us today. But I'd love to get you back on the show as soon as possible to continue. There's a lot more that we need to bring attention to the great work that you're doing. And for those that aren't aware, Billboard Battalion is what you look up on both Facebook and online, and you'll find Wade's work and introduction, amazing videos that you got out there. Thank you, Wade, and we will no doubt talk really soon.
Very much appreciate your time, and we're getting the word out there, and more and more people are coming on board. So well done to you as well, and we'll talk anytime that you would like to. That'd be great.
Good on you, Wade. That's terrific. After the break, we're going to have George Christensen join us. You're listening to TNT Radio.
Dolores Cahill on TNT Radio.
And I think what was so powerful about Dr. Zelenko is that he had already in February, March of 2020 found a solution, but then he had applied that solution to 799 people and they were all saved in his local community, and they were very elderly, by giving them hydroxychloroquine and zinc. So he'd already more or less done the equivalent of a clinical trial and shown that none of the 800, we'll say, patients had died.
What he came up with, he never really claimed to invent it, and he never really wanted to keep it to himself. There are others that were in parallel coming up with similar protocols, hydroxychloroquine, zinc as an ionophore, and an antibiotic at the same time, was something that was being considered around the world. Dr. Zelenko brought it out in the public. He took the brunt of a lockstep cover-up, I would say, and he never gave up.
Weekends with Dolores Cahill on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
The PCR test for monkeypox. Another crap PCR test for another crap virus. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
George Christensen spent 11 years in Australian Parliament. He spent 6 years as a city councillor, 4.5 years as party whip. He's got 2 degrees, one in journalism, one in theology, and he has successfully contested 6 elections. And he's joining us now on Jason Q, Citizen and Friends. Welcome back to the show, George.
Well, thanks very much, Jason. Thanks for all the work that you're doing in the cause of freedom and liberty.
Isn't it just incredible that where we are today, it's no longer the left-right paradigm, it's the freedom versus tyranny paradigm, and that's we just have to keep going about this battle. And you're one of those people that decided to stand down from politics to retire, and I think you spent a total of, what, 4 seconds in retirement before you relaunched your journalist career as a blogger. Congratulations.
Yeah, no rest for the wicked, as they say. So anyway, I'm doing my own little bit for the movement with my writings. I put out a newsletter daily that people find at nationfirst.substack.com. It's going good. We've got thousands and thousands of subscribers, actually, that we're all very energised about the issues that I'm sure TNT radio listeners are energised by. So a bit of a synergy there between you and I, Jason Q.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. It's nice because we can use the various different media platforms, and that's what I love about being on radio now is it's one of probably the areas that we didn't necessarily have infrastructure in the movement. And, of course, we can bring many, many people together and we can literally cross-pollinate the information that needs to get out there in all the ways that we do. And it is a great moment. George, comparing life in politics to comparing life out of politics, what's the first thing that that you notice when you're no longer having to get up and play in the public space anymore?
Yeah, there's a lot that you do notice. One is, being removed from what Scott Morrison used to call the Canberra bubble, which actually had his government captive, to be quite honest, but being removed from the Canberra bubble actually is a whole sense of liberation and freedom about that, I can tell you, because you get back in touch with real people and the real world. And there's a big difference, a major gap between that Canberra bubble that's happening amongst everyday Australians. The second thing is that obviously the number of people that are contacting you for help drops off tremendously, but that's the case with any job. Once you're out of it, then requests that were coming through from that job are going away, but they don't all go away. I'm actually interested and amazed by the number of people that still contact me reaching out for some form of help, advice. And look, you know, I'm busy doing a lot of things, but I try to get back to those people and help them out where I can.
Yes, indeed, and this is the hardest thing, of course, is in public life, is just how much you've got to do. No one ever expects the depth of the work that's involved, and those of us that became candidates and had a shot at the last election go in there, obviously naive to that process, and you get in there. But you did 11 long years in government for most of it, which is extraordinary. And then, of course, you get that great relief at the end. There's so much I want to talk to you about, George. I'm just having a little bit of difficulty with the sound. And what we might do is quickly cut to the news headlines, I believe, and then we'll get you sorted and come back. And I'm going to ask you about what's happening with ScoMo this week, which is I think it's a much bigger story than ScoMo wants us to believe, and it may be why Albo is pushing down that pathway. But it's the secrecy that we're really struggling with in a time that there's just been too many secrets. We are all demanding transparency, and we're all demanding to be heard. And this may well be where the great big fracture comes, and the freedom movement will prevail in the end. I'm going to ask for that break now, and we might get the news headlines at the same time.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Hundreds of families on New Zealand's South Island were forced to leave their homes on Thursday after dramatic flooding prompted a state of emergency in three regions. Rail passengers across Britain suffered fresh travel misery today as tens of thousands of workers staged strikes and long-running disputes over pay, jobs, and conditions. Finland's prime minister says she has nothing to hide after a video emerged of her parting wildly with celebrity friends.
Did you know there are many ways you can listen to TNT Radio? Why not stream us direct from our website on your desktop, tablet, or mobile device? Or download our app from the App Store? We even stream live on YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. And for the rest of the hour, I'm going to be speaking to George Christensen, who sensationally joined the One Nation Party in the lead up to the last election. And it wasn't without reason, George. The reason that you quit, it seems, was over the government deciding to share your data, which was certainly against any Liberal National Party, idea, belief, system, trust, that they would be standing up for your freedoms. They went the other way, didn't they?
Yeah, well, there was a lot of reasons, but that digital identity agenda was one of them. It's just the biggest belief that that a Liberal National government that, at least in theory, is supposed to be against all sorts of incursion into privacy and against Big Brother would suggest a system like that. It's something that we would come to expect, I think, from the left side of politics, and no doubt that they will implement it, sadly, now they're in government. But there was more than that. Obviously, the last 2 years, we saw the biggest incursion into people's lives by big government. We saw the kind of discrimination deployed against people who were basically making their own decisions, of the sort that we'd never, ever would have seen before, the kind of discrimination that those people suffered. So, you know, there was a litany of sins that led to my leaving the Liberal National Party and joining Pauline Hanson's One Nation. And that's a party I still remain a member of today, and I'm very proud and happy to be a member of that party.
Yeah, good on you, George. There's nothing more endearing to find someone who truly stands for their convictions. And when people work that out and realise that it's not about supporting a team or perhaps, you know, your favourite colour, not a football team, it's something very, very different. And this is something that many of us who eventually worked that out and realised that once we voted one particular way because that seemed all we had to do, that that's certainly not the case at all. The digital ID thing is truly, truly shocking. And many of us are well aware of it and are following closely. I wanted to bring up the subject of ScoMo this week and the secret ministries to get your thoughts on the severity of it in terms of, again, secrecy and hiding very pertinent information from the government. What are your thoughts on what went down?
Well, look, on the one hand, I know that there's a lot of the mainstream media, the legacy media, that are thumping their chest over it. It concerns me less on face value that Scott Morrison had five different ministry portfolios. It more concerns me about not him having extra jobs, but what concerns me is the people throughout the pandemic who lost their jobs because of vaccine mandates, and I wish to goodness that there would have been as much focus on that and the hundreds of thousands of Australians who were cast asunder because of these government or corporation-imposed vaccine mandates as there has been focus on Scott Morrison having five jobs. But nonetheless, it is weird. It is something that I guess that we are right to question. Why did the Prime Minister feel the need to have secret portfolios, so much so that ministers who actually held those portfolios co-jointly with the Prime Minister had no idea that he actually held them co-jointly. In one area, resources, the Prime Minister actually made a ministerial decision. So this is bizarre, to say the least. There are some people out there, like my good friend John Adams, who's an economist, who's speculating, you know, around whether or not that was part and parcel of a World Economic Forum agenda. I don't know about that, but it's weird to say the least. And if anything, as Pauline Hanson has said this week, it really shows the need for a Royal Commission into the handling of the pandemic. Because all sorts of human rights were breached, and now we find that normal governance was breached as well.
Yes, indeed. Now, George, can you explain the difference between if we went Royal Commission versus we went Parliamentary Inquiry? How would the two play out if we did a COVID post-mortem?
Unfortunately, a Parliamentary Inquiry, while it would be welcome you know, as the least that could be done, is going to be partisan. It's going to be run by politicians. And let's be honest, I mean, we've got a parliament that's made up of roughly 150 or so House of Representative members, about 76 or so senators. So add those two together and you get about 226 people who sit as politicians in our federal parliament. And out of that, I could probably name six people who would be pro-freedom. Maybe a bit more, but you know, you've Pauline Hanson, Malcolm Roberts, Ralph Babette, you've got Alex Antic, you've got Jared Rennick, and you've got Matthew Canavan. So that's six that I've come up with, and I start to struggle after that as to the names of others. So when you've got six out of 225 or so people who we could put in the pro-freedom column, I would safely say that any result from any inquiry that's made up by that mix of people is not going to show recommendations that would be in favour of freedom and liberty should there be another pandemic. A Royal Commission, though, has an independent judge. It allows the public to put forward their arguments. It allows actual documents to be explored and uncovered. It's a judicial inquiry, and a judicial inquiry with maximum powers. That's not to say that they're going to arrive at a position that's pro-freedom and pro-liberty either, but I think that there's more chance of them doing it than the current mob of politicians that we've got down there in Canberra doing it.
Yes, certainly. I guess it's the terms of reference that many of us are afraid of. The Australian Wheat Board Royal Commission was very, very narrow and was never going to result in what we knew was going on there, the way that former Prime Minister John Howard had set that one up. So it does leave us always doubting. Yeah. And this is the hardest part of it, isn't it? That the powers that be have such ability to manipulate in their direction that it's virtually impossible. It seems like every time you're in a two-horse race, you're 100-to-1 chance of winning it because of the way that they can load it. And that's why we all become quite cynical about it all. But again, if we can put that information out there into the public domain, at least people can be aware of it. And then demand more from their politicians, which is what it's all about, of course. Now, the other big elephant in the room here was, if ScoMo appoints himself to these five ministries secretly, is there any way that he gets a clip on those five portfolios? Does he get paid for it?
I doubt it. I doubt there would have been any extra payment that he got. Technically, as Prime Minister. Is the word suggests, the Prime Minister is responsible for all functions of government. In reality, though, he delegates under a Westminster system to certain people. So I don't think that the Prime Minister would have got any extra money, but it was the question of the extra powers and also the question of the secrecy of it all. It's weird, it's bizarre, and it needs looking into, and it also needs... We need to ensure that a lot of the mistakes, this is the least of which, a lot of the mistakes that occur over the pandemic never ever happen again.
Yes, indeed. There's just such a frustrating component to it, isn't it, that we look at this and wonder what was it all about, and of course being played down. Now, they say nothing in politics happens by accident. Is this a way of ScoMo setting it up so that he has a way to exit the parliament and not have to see the next 3 years out? Or should he just resign? Or is he waiting for a job offer before he announces he will step down?
The truthful answer is I don't know. Today he sort of said that he's not going to stand down. I don't think he will. It certainly, bizarrely, has put him back into the limelight, and I see he's making very light of it on social media. That's perhaps accidental, but I don't think that that it will lead him to resigning, but you never know. A week is a long time in politics, and I'll say that today, and tomorrow could show a different thing.
Yes, indeed. Look, many of us are watching, and one of your other colleagues, Greg Hunt, on his 6-month sabbatical post-retirement, before we kind of expect him to announce that he's going to take on some exotic position over in Switzerland with our non-friend Klaus Schwab. And it just rubs insult into injury. And this is the thing that people are skeptical about and are quite, you know, on the back foot and concerned about. And rightly so. I don't think it's something that we need to dismiss, that that people are saying, well, how is it that you can have all these connections and then turn up again? And that's, again, the same thing with ScoMo and probably in New Zealand with Ardern if she gets tossed out in the next election.
You're spot on. The revolving door between government officials and these major corporations is just absolutely shocking. It really does show. You mentioned someone before for legal reasons. I won't name names, but it wouldn't surprise me that someone goes off to work for big pharmaceutical or indeed a big Davos position. And that at the end of the day shows who they were actually currying favour to. We've had previous ministers who made certain decisions that were very favourable to certain companies, only then to go and get a job with those companies shortly after they leave Parliament. Now, that is unethical to say the least, and I've got to say it probably should be illegal if it's not illegal. But what these politicians are doing by doing that is actually exposing that they're not there to listen to the average ordinary Australian. They're there serving their globalist elite masters. They're there serving these multinational corporations. They're not serving the Australian people. Think that the current lot are any different. Don't think the current lot are any different. Well, they will go off and serve their particular masters when they leave Parliament, and that will be when we know who they really truly were in the pocket of.
And we never seem to learn from our mistakes. There was a former trade minister who signed us into the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He didn't step down the day after. He retired from politics the day after he signed it. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
Yeah, I mean, just a truly unbelievable scenario that could be the case.
There was also the case of a former trade minister who basically oversaw a situation where Langbridge, a Chinese Communist Party-linked organisation, had extensive links to the Communist China's People Liberation's Army, acquired the port of Darwin, and he retired. And shortly afterwards, that person actually started a paid contract with Langbridge. So that's, you know, interesting to say the least. Again, for legal reasons, I probably won't say any more about that. But people can wonder themselves about what the hell is going on there.
Isn't it horrible that you can't just name the truth for what it is because it's all out there in the public domain and these people think that, how dare you expose me in this way and embarrass me because of what I did? It's just an astonishing thing that in public life you just can't accept that you are out here being a public servant, the best interest for your country, serve the Constitution of Australia, and yet we just find this murky, murky world. It's horrible.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. I think that, their actions speak loud enough without even adding any commentary to it sometimes.
Yeah, well said. Now, George, this is all about freedom. This is the point. This is the reason we are meant to be the lucky country and we live in a Western democracy, but it's freedom that seems to be eroding and being stolen from us in real time. And this is one of the things that is the great thing for what you're doing. What can you tell us briefly about just what we need to be aware of in terms of this freedom and how it is that we can attack it and at least get our politicians to be somewhat held to account or made aware that we're not happy?
Well, I think that we all have our bit to do. We don't have to be in Parliament to do it. We don't even have to be in a political party to do it. You're doing it. Your listeners, no doubt, are doing it by being part of the TNT radio community. And hopefully what is happening is that people are capturing interviews where critical information is given to them and sharing that with other people or just sharing it in conversations. But we all have our own spheres of influence and we can assist in the fight for freedom, true freedom. And in fact, it's interesting that you raised that topic because today I've put out in my little newsletter a little missive around why freedom will always prevail, and I think it does. And the reason, I've given eight different reasons, and I won't go into the whole eight reasons, but the one thing that we can say is that freedom is a natural state for humankind. We are born free. Our minds are free. And when we are oppressed, when we are subjugated, when freedom is removed from us, whether it be freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of thought, freedom of conscience, freedom of association and assembly, any of those freedoms, freedom of worship, religion, when they're taken from us, well, we're put into an unnatural state. And, you know, we then are faced with a choice. Do we live our lives like caged animals, or do we take a stand to obtain liberty from what is essentially tyranny? And there's an old phrase, and it goes something like this: it's better to die on your feet than live on your knees.
Mm.
And the fact that some people, that many people, in fact, would prefer death over a lack of freedom or subjugation, it just shows how innate and important and natural freedom is to humanity. And we can look across many a conflict over the aeons, not just the world wars of this last century, but battles and wars beyond that. Nearly every single one of them, some of them were not good wars, that were obviously manufactured wars by the elite, but there's been many a struggle and many a conflict that has come out of the need for freedom in the face of tyranny. So that's why I believe that ultimately we are going to be on the winning side. The question is how long it's going to take until we win.
This is the thing, isn't it? And no one would have thought, looking back, and if this all did in fact start when Donald Trump was elected in 2016 and threats of an impeachment within minutes of his surprise result, showing us that the war had technically started at that point, it feels like we're already, 6.5 years into this battle. And it continues, and I probably a good time to just get your comments or thoughts on the FBI raid on Trump. And there's a whole lot there and a whole lot behind the scenes, and now we've got the judge over there coming out and saying he's going to release a redacted version of the various documents that they relied upon. First of all, why would they need to redact a warrant to show the general public?
I don't know why they'd need to redact it, but I know that certainly Donald Trump is calling for that warrant to be made public. So I don't think he has anything to fear. I think that what the FBI have to fear is the fact that their search or their raid of Mar-a-Lago, Trump's residence and resort there, was actually was caught on film and on audio. So. I know that Donald Trump's son has threatened to release that audio, and I suspect that that will come out in some time and just show how political that raid was. It was 100% political. Just go back a moment and just say that Donald Trump, you know, is not a saint. He's not a savior. He's not the second coming or anything like that. But he certainly did burst the bubble for the globalists, and he certainly threw a spanner in the works for them. And you're right, you know, it seems that everything's come to a head in the last 6 years, and I think that's because they realised that the Trump presidency was a major threat to the globalist plans for the future, and that they needed to jump down on this and crush it and make sure that it never reared its head again. And over in the USA, there really is no one like him. He's a lightning rod for people who are patriots, who are nation first, America first sort of people, who reject globalism and who reject the woke agenda, who reject the multinational corporations push, who reject the Great Reset and the World Economic Forum. So they need to destroy Donald Trump, because destroying Trump destroys hope that movement will basically gain power again through Trump claiming the White House. And so that's what this is all about. We have never seen anything like this for any other president or serious political figure. I mean, tell me, why wasn't Hillary Clinton's home raided to get her computers and emails? I mean, why was she completely and utterly exonerated by the FBI prior to the 2016 presidential election when they actually said that they believed that she'd done the wrong thing? It's like a police officer saying, oh, you know, we did catch them speeding a dozen times, but we're not going to fine them. So they let her off the hook. They also, you know, were scared of Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son. I mean, they don't care about the scandalous sort of stuff, the drug taking and the prostitutes and whatnot that people talk about. That's all the titillating sort of stuff that makes good fodder for tabloids. It's the kickbacks. It's the Burisma. It's the Ukraine situation. It's the Chinese Communist Party compromise situation. All of that is diabolical when we're talking about the son of the president, who in emails and text messages and all that refers to his father, the now president, then vice president at the time these emails were going on, about the big man or the big fellow. So, you know, that's an issue. But why is the FBI not seemingly acting on that in such a public matter? Because neither Joe Biden nor Hillary Clinton present any threat to the deep state that the FBI is certainly part of. That's why this is happening, because Trump poses a threat to the whole order, and they want him gone. And they will do whatever it takes to make him gone. I suspect that this will go much further. But the funny thing is, right now, at this point in time, it has galvanized people in the States. I know of, I've got close American friends who only a short while ago were telling me that they didn't want Trump to run for the presidency again. They felt that he had too much baggage. Well, the day after this raid happened, these friends are on the phone to me. They're strapped on the MAGA hats again. They've got the Trump flags. Wow. They want him to run.
Yes.
They've galvanized support for Donald Trump. And I think unless they pull out something like an impeachment, or unless they jail him under, pardon the pun, trumped up charges, that he will be back in the White House in 2024. He will be back. That's what they're terrified of.
Exactly, and this time around, with all the extra evidence that's out there, and of course John Durham in the background working through the original Russiagate, and the same cast of characters seemingly smearing all over this FBI raid, it's almost inevitable that the draining of the swamp will be the main priority, plus of course the rebuilding of the collapsed United States at the same time. It'll take the pressure off the whole green energy movement, and so there's innumerable reasons why the American public will vote in force and get out there, and it'll be the most exciting election campaign in history, if it wasn't already the last two that he was involved with. I just want to make this point, George, that when James Comey came out and said that Hillary had special access programs intelligence, and they identified through these email chains, 9 emails, 21 chains or whatever it was, and then he said it wasn't recklessly negligent, it was extremely careless. It was this abuse of colourful, fake legal language that allowed him to justify not charging her, despite the fact that intention wasn't necessary.
Right.
So we all knew that we'd been scammed at that point, and of course that would have meant that Hillary wouldn't have stood. It would have meant at the time that Bernie Sanders would have walked in and become the nominee, and ironically was the only one that was polling better than Trump at the time and may well have become the president. And so you look back at history and you just wonder about all these moves and countermoves, but it seems to be that it's inevitable. It does feel biblical when I talk to many people who are believers, and they just see and compare and discuss all of this information. It's something I didn't expect that I would ask you about, but George, you are obviously you're religious, and you've done a theology degree. Have you got any thoughts, or do you feel anything about this in terms of perhaps a theological perspective?
Yes, in fact, it's interesting you raise that, because I had an in-depth conversation with someone last night about this exact question. Look, I defer to a learned elder who I talk to regularly about these matters, And he said to me, we're entering a time of tribulation, but it's not the great tribulation as everyone sort of thinks that it might be, because we, but we'll, the reality is we'll never know whether it is or it isn't. But certainly things are going to get tough, not only for people of traditional faith, but also people of traditional living and people who hold to the tenets of Western civilization and freedom in general. We're going to go through a period of persecution. But as I say, I think it, we've been through a period of persecution. What am I saying? We're going to have to go through it. I mean, anyone in the last 2 years who lost their job, who was discriminated against, who couldn't have a social life because they chose not to inject a substance that was still being tested and that didn't have long-term safety data into themselves, they were persecuted. That is exactly what happened. They were persecuted. So, you know, but this is going to happen more and more on many other different issues rather than just the vaccine. I say the word vaccine in air quotes there. It's not a vaccine, but anyway, we won't get into that subject. We'll be here for another hour. But the reality is we're going to go through a period of persecution. Now, the one thing that I would say is if anyone ever lines up to bring in some microchip that is an identifier, is the thing that you pay with, is the thing that that can somehow manipulate your body or something like that, or your mind, well, that's when you should pick up your Bible, flick to that last book, because that will be the sign that we have entered into really probably the end times. But that technology is out there. No one's proposing at this stage that it be deployed in such a way, in such a way compulsory.
Actually, George, there is someone who is.
We're gearing up to that.
No, but we have seen corporates come out just last week sending out letters to thousands and thousands of its customers suggesting exactly this, the microchip under the skin, which is truly frightening. But again, it does raise enormous awareness quickly, doesn't it?
Well, mate, if you read the Book of Revelation, and obviously the most populist thing in the Book of Revelations or popular culture reference is the mark of the beast. But
yes.
That's essentially what's being talked about, a mark that goes in your hand or in your forehead that is an identifier and that you can buy with. You can't trade. You can't buy or sell without this mark. So that would be the closest thing that I can see in modern technology to what's being described there. And I'll have to go and do a little bit more research. So I wasn't aware of... whatever corporate rig it was, whoever it is either deluded or doing work of the devil.
Yeah, you'll probably notice it now on social media, but a Queensland insurance company is where it's at, and it's quite confronting that they are just putting out brazen. And you know that when you see the way that they market it, 30% of the population will just go, oh yeah, that seems like a great idea, and off it goes and it's running, and the media will blow that up to make it look like majority support, as they often do. We've run out of time, George. It's been wonderful to speak to you again, and I wish you all the luck in the world with the work that you're doing and continue to do. Your Substack is what, Nation First is where they should look for newsletters, and georgechristiansen.com.au, I believe, is the name of the website, to continue with your great work. And I look forward to speaking with you soon. Have a wonderful weekend. We've got Rick Munn coming up next. You're listening to TNT Radio.